Shoot the Defence, the best podcast in the world. We're at it.
I keep saying Henry's a forward.
Richie, who's the best striker you've played against?
Henry.
God.
And the fact that we are now taking our country and put our country on the map of world soccer, being the first African nation, the third world nation in the whole world to win an Olympic gold medal in soccer, you know, it was unbelievable.
If you're going to take the time to go and get a pig head and break my locker open and wrap my clothes in it, that's sending a different message to me.
I've had to protect my family from going out into the street because you'll have random people that just coming up and abusing them racially. Even some old school managers who are British, they still have the same racial undertones like the man in the street who they're trying to condemn.
Hello, welcome to a very special edition of Shoot Defence. I'm your host, Stel, and joining me is a gentleman who is highly experienced in the coaching world of football. He's been everywhere. He's FC Porto, Sporting Lisbon, Tondela. He's the head coach of the Mozambique national team. Blimey, Luis Felipe Gonçalves. How are you doing, Luis?
Hi, I'm fine, thank you.
Great to have you on the show. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. I'm okay. I'm at home. Everything is okay.
Fantastic. How have you been coping with the coronavirus situation?
It's a new situation for everybody. And I'm at home in Portugal with my family. And of course, always aware with the situation. Be careful. Always with the ears and the eyes in Mozambique also to know how is the situation there, and hoping that everything is coming well, because we are too much time without playing, without training.
Yeah, I can understand that. I guess you're very excited to get back into football, aren't you?
Yes. Of course, in these months at home, I'm always studying. I'm always watching some matches of the past, and always I'm always connected with my technical staff, with my staff and my players, if I can say that, and trying to look a new player. I'm trying to find the new players to our national team. But, of course, in Mozambique, the league didn't start yet. So we have to wait. And, of course, when began, I go again to Mozambique, and we'll see. Waiting, but working also.
As you mentioned, the Mozambique national team is the project that you're working on at the moment. I know it's been a very tricky situation, especially, as I said, with COVID. But when it comes to selecting players, I know there are a few footballers in the squad who play in France, some play in Portugal. Is it difficult to find footballers outside Mozambique that play in different leagues, or are you familiar with the pool of talent? Because you do have a lot of very young players in the squad.
Yes. We have players that they play abroad, and they came from Mozambique, and they are in Portugal, France, other countries like Kazakhstan, for example, Azerbaijan, South Africa. But a few players that we are looking, we are trying to get them, if I can say that, they are from second generation, if you understand me. They have a father or mother from Mozambique, and they play, for example, in Germany, in second or third league in Germany, but they are very good players. And we have one of them, Retifo, our striker, is one example of that kind of players. But we have more, and we are always looking good players from second generation. But if they want to play from Mozambique, of course, they want, they are welcome, but we are always monitoring the players, and of course we have our tools, our technological tools, and our scouts, and we are doing our best to find new players. But I have to say, we can't forget the players that play in Mozambique. They are in Mozambique, and Mozambique have talented players. If they have a good opportunity, they have the chance to go to another league in Europe or other country from other continent. But to a good club, to a good project, I believe we're gonna know more players from Mozambique. And I believe if they have the opportunity, they go far, you know.
Is the main priority to develop players? Because I know Africa Cup of Nations in 2022 is in Algeria, and you've obviously got 2 years to plan for that. But is qualification high on the priority list, or is it mostly about developing footballers and getting a bigger pool of talent to be ready for future tournaments?
No, qualification is the priority. I've decided that the final phase will be in 2022 in January. So we need to play more 4 matches to our qualification. We have played 2 matches. We have 4 points. But at the same time, we have to play. We need to play the matches, the qualification, the qualifiers to World Cup. You know.
Mm.
So I believe I don't know yet if in this year, 2020, we're gonna play. But in the next year, we're gonna play many matches. Between CAN qualification and the World Cup qualification. But priority is the qualification because, of course, develop players. We have a technical director. He's working. We are working together. And I'm always available to cooperate and to give my contribute to that that area. That I consider very important, but our job is the result, you know. Of course, our connection with the younger teams, under 20, under 23, and our connection with the coaches and the knowing that we have with the players is important, because as you saw, we have many young, talented players, but that's a result from how my past in Mozambique. You know, before I went to China, I was in Mozambique like assistant coach, and I know the players. I know many players since under 17. You know, So if I have the good player, if I have a talented player, why not? If he has the skills, he has the competence to play in the first team, you're going to play. We have examples like Jenny, like Tam, and other players.
You are very highly qualified and highly skilled when it comes to youth development. So let's talk about your time at Sporting. As we know, Sporting Lisbon. I know prior to that you were at Estoril, but your real quality shone at Sporting as the youth head coach. Back, you were there for a good 12 years, a very long time, but you know, you've unearthed or worked with a lot of quality footballers, and I know that clubs in Portugal are very well known for producing youngsters. We've seen well over the years, even before the likes of Cristiano Ronaldo broke into the scene, we know about Luis Figo, we know about Eusebio in the past. But in terms of the club Sporting, when you got the job, did you realise how big the club was prior to going there? Because we know about their history and we know about the reputation, but as an individual yourself going from Estoril to Sporting, it obviously was a big jump, but when you saw the facilities, when you saw the trophy cabinet, for example, did you realise, wow, I'm here?
Yes, it's true. I knew, of course, I knew the club. It's a very big club in Portugal. And when I had the opportunity to go to Sporting in 1999, I went to a project, a very interesting project, And before the new academy, we worked in the old stadium and with all facilities and all the pitches. But before academy, before the new facilities, at here in 2002, many players have formed in Sporting, like you said, with Figo, Paulo Futre, Simão, other players. But with the new facilities in that new project that I had, the how can I say, the privilege to be part of it. Of course, Sporting Lisbon, Sporting Portugal is the name, Sporting Portugal, gave a big jump in the producing players like Cristiano Ronaldo and Ricardo Quaresma, Adrian Silva, Rui Patricio, so on. Many players that played in 2016. They won the European Championship. They had the best in my hands, if I can say that. My hands. So, of course, it's a very, very big club. And the museum and the trophies, not only in football, in many, many sports. They have many, many trophies, and it's a very big club. And I respect them a lot. 12 years of my career there, I learned a lot. I believe I teach something also, but that was a very, very good experience. And, I was part of a big project, and we create a new idea about the how we can produce players, if you can say that. It was very interesting, yes.
We know the likes of Luis Figo broke through Sporting's academy, but when you look at, say, the Euro 2004 squad, a lot of people are saying that that was Portugal's golden generation, with the likes of Fernando Couto and Maniche, Simão, as you mentioned, Rui Costa. They got to the final, but as you mentioned, it was 2016 where Portugal won the Euros. And a lot of people were saying, well, that squad wasn't as good as a 2004 squad. But I believe the 2016 squad had more cohesion. There was more of a team unity. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I agree. But 2016, you saw many young players in the squad. And I believe more team, they won like a team, of course. Portugal had Ronaldo, but as you remember, he got injury in the beginning of the match, you know. But in the whole tournament, of course, Cristiano Ronaldo was important, but all team played together. So, yes, I agree with you. I agree. Because, like you said, the golden generation that was, they won the World Cup. Under 19 World Cup, under 20 World Cup, many years before, some of them was finishing their careers. Some of them they were in the very big moment, very good moment. But I agree. In the 2016, more team. But Cristiano Ronaldo was there also.
Yeah, he's one of the greatest players that we've seen, especially in recent history. When you look back at your time at Sporting, you know, you were with the likes of Cristiano Ronaldo, Quaresma, etc., etc. Did you ever see any one of those players that you worked with becoming a Ballon d'Or winner or having such a successful time? Because, as I mentioned earlier, Luis Figo was probably the most successful player to come out of Sporting in recent memory. But then you got the likes of Nani and Cristiano Ronaldo, Quaresma, etc., etc. Did you see any one of those players in the squad and you thought, wow, one of these days they are going to set the world on fire?
No, I didn't think like that, you know. But, of course, when we saw Cristiano Ronaldo, even when he was 14 years old, 13 years old, everybody said the same. this kid if you want, because that's very important. If kid wants to be, he needs to make many sacrifices. You know, he needs to be focused in the what he wants and work hard to get that goal. But he had the qualities, the skills, and everybody says the same. If he wants, he can be. He could be a very top player. He could be a top player. So, but I didn't think, like you said, he's going to be the Ballon d'Or. But all the coaches said the same. He's going to be a very, very good player. He's going to be a top player if he wants. So, because I believe it's many people in Portugal, they compare and big discussion if Ronaldo is better or worse than Eusebio. I believe it's different, of course, different times. But Ronaldo is a very, very, very good player and a top player. I believe he's the best player, Portuguese best player for all times, you know. Of course, when you have a kid in front of you with 14 years old, 13 years old, you can imagine. Maybe he's going to be a top player. Maybe he's going to be one of the best. But you can't say. I'm sure he's gonna win that prizes and beat all the records and everything. But Cristiano Ronaldo is amazing because he has 36, right?
Yep.
36. he's there. He's on the top. So it's many years on the top.
I know that. His father died when Cristiano was 18 years old. It was when he joined Manchester United. In fact, I think it was just before he joined Manchester United when his father passed away. He's very close with his mother, isn't he? Do you remember much about his father at the time? Because as you said, he was 14 when he joined Sporting. Was there any...
No. He joined Sporting with 11.
With 11, okay.
I met him, he was 14, 13, yes.
Okay.
But I didn't knew his father, no, because only the mother was the person that told with the responsibles and
right.
Everything. Later, I heard about the father and I knew the story, but I didn't.
There's another player there called Ricardo Quaresma. I've spoken to many people about this player, and he seems to be a bit of an enigma because he's got so much ability. He always had such ability, but he just couldn't take it to that next level. And I guess there are many comparisons between him and Cristiano in the sense that they're quick, skillful, but I think it's the application that perhaps let Ricardo Quaresma down. Would you say that's fair?
Quaresma is different. If we compare in the same age, of course, they aren't the same age, but they are near. But if you remember Quaresma when he was 15 years old, for example, and Ronaldo, maybe Quaresma was more skillful, more... He's different, he's different. Quaresma is... Cristiano Ronaldo, it's a mix between skills and work, you know. And Quaresma is... I never saw a player like him doing the abilities with the ball like Quaresma. For me, of course, the game is different. Maybe in some moments he wasn't so strong, mentality speaking, so I don't know. But Quaresma is different. He's more skillful. If I can say that word.
Was there one player that surprised you in terms of where their career went, whether it be good or bad?
It's a pity, but everybody, I believe everybody knew the story from Fabio Paine. He was, I don't know if you heard about him, he was the best player with he was from my team when Rui Patricio was the goalkeeper in that team. Rui Patricio was the goalkeeper, and Daniel Carrizo, I don't know if you know the player, he was in Sevilla last season.
Mm-hmm.
He was the captain and the central defender, and Payne was the best player, and I believe he's one of the best players that I ever had coached. But unfortunately, he didn't achieve the top, he didn't achieve the high level, and that was the for me the big surprise, for negative of course, but many issues, many problems, many things around football, you know. But he knows that, and now he's a man, and he knows, and now he don't play anymore. He's trying to reorganize his life. That was the big surprise for me, because he was very talented, you know. So Payne, I don't know if you heard about Fabio Payne. He was in the Chelsea B one season. Chelsea B.
Okay.
I can't precise the season, but he was there. He was there in England, and after a while, he said, "I want to return to Portugal because I'm bored."
Fair enough. As you do. Brilliant. Okay, so you've moved around a few clubs, and I know after your time at Sporting, you coached a side in the Portuguese fourth division, then you went to a club in the third division, but then you ended up at Al Ahly in Saudi Arabia for a few months, about
yes.
8 months. Now, we know all about the culture in Saudi Arabia. Was it difficult for you to adapt to life out there?
At the beginning, yes, but I was in a project with more seven Portuguese coaches.
Right.
And we were like a family. All of us, we were there without our families.
Mm-hmm.
We were alone, but we were together, so it was very important. And the culture, yes, is very different. But in the beginning, we need to adapt. But after a while, things are. I believe the Portuguese cultures, we have a very big capacity of adaptation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but after a while it was normal, I can say. Yeah, of course, it's very different, because if you go on the street and everything is different. When we go to a mall, they call a mall a shopping.
Yep.
If you go on Friday, you can't go. Because Friday only for families, and we were alone. We,
right.
We were only 6-7 men, and that's the culture, and we have to respect that. For example, in the restaurants, you have a space for only for families and a space only for men, and the women now they are starting to drive. But in that time we were there, they don't drive, they don't. So, and they are a country where religion is very strong, you know. So we need to adapt, and sometimes at the beginning in our training sessions, the players they call me, "Coach, we have to stop because we're gonna pray now." We have to adapt, and okay, so when I plan the training session, I need to consider the praying time, you know. So, but that was a good experience, very good experience. I have friends, Saudi friends, I still have contact with them, and but it's like I told you, if you go to a country, a different country, a different culture, you need to know that you're going to find something different. But you are the person that are invited to be there. So you need to adapt, and you need to know, try to know better the culture, know better the football, because it's different the way they play, the style of play, and you need to try to adapt more and more. And of course, after in the end, you wanna there to teach something, to coach, and to give them your experience also. So you have to make a balance between the things, you know, like in Shai last year.
Talk to me about tactics here briefly, because I'm no tactician, but the one thing I've noticed in the past maybe 10 to 15 years is that the 4-2-3-1 formation has become very, very popular. And I remember first seeing it when Jose Mourinho was head coach at FC Porto, when he had Costinho and Maniche in the holding midfield positions. They had Luis Alberto, and I think Benny McCarthy was up front. And then It's kind of evolved, and it came into the Premier League. We saw it at Euro 2004 with the Portuguese national team. But we've seen the likes of Fernando Santos use it. But then the likes of Nuno at Wolves, he's implemented his own 3-4-3. Jorge Jesus, who did a fantastic job at Flamengo, albeit he didn't have a great time at Sporting as head coach, has got his own system. Yeah. But what is your preferred system?
Yes, I preferred a system. I can say 4-3-3, but you can say also 4-1-2-3. It's more classic system, because as you said, now the coaches, many coaches, some of them are returning to old systems. Mm-hmm. Some of them, they are improving the old systems with the new dynamics. But I prefer the 4-3-3 when I have one midfielder that, if you want to say defensive midfielder, is okay. I used to say number 6.
Okay.
I prefer one striker, two wingers, and two midfielders, but they are more closely with the striker and the wingers, and they make many combinations and many changes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but sometimes I play also with two midfielders, like you said, 4-2-3-1. But I preferred, like I said before, four defenders, a line on four, with four defenders, one midfielder, two other midfielders. But in Portugal, I call them interior. Interior, in English, I can't say which designation. But they are midfielders. They are close. They're more closer than the striker. Sometimes you can play with not a striker like, but a forward, but in the interior zone. And sometimes you can play there with a winger, but you know they're gonna change many times. And I prefer to play, for example, with a two wingers, very 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 wide.
Yeah.
I see many teams playing with the wingers that came inside, and they project the right back and left back.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. It's many coaches like to play that way, but I prefer with two wingers very wide. Of course, when you attack in the right corridor, the left winger, you need to come inside to finish if he has the opportunity. For me, the number 6 is very important. Number 6, the midfielder, because he makes the balance. He guarantees the team balance, you know. And that's how we play in Mozambique. So sometimes I can play with strikers also, but normally only one striker. It depends. That's my preferred system. 4-3-3, one midfielder, two midfielders close to striker and two wingers. You know?
So when you say that number 6 position, at this moment in time, if you're looking at the players available throughout the world or that are playing in that position, who would you say is the ideal person? Because in the Premier League, people talking about N'Golo Kante being the best in that position, but I don't think that's his best position. I see him as more of a, I wouldn't say a creative midfielder, but he's a box-to-box midfielder. He isn't that holding midfielder. I think Matic in his prime was probably up there, but you know, if we want to talk about the best number sixes, would you say Makelele is probably the best?
Yes, I can agree with you. But Matic is very good. Would play in that position also. And I like also Casemiro.
Casemiro, yeah.
And Porto, they have Danilo, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Danilo from Porto. He's very, very good playing that position. William Carvalho also is good playing that position. But yes, I can agree with you.
Excellent.
Very good. Very, very good player, Michael.
Okay, now this is a little segue onto my next question. We're talking about number sixes. We're talking about Portuguese coaches. Now, there's a certain Portuguese coach at Tottenham Hotspur called Jose Mourinho, who you probably know very, very well. Very successful head coach. And he has a little bit of a conundrum with a player called Dombele, who was brought in under Mauricio Pochettino. Now, I don't know if there's anything personal between the two, but Dombele can't seem to get into the starting lineup. And it looks like Mourinho would prefer someone like Moussa Sissoko in the centre midfield with Harry Winks. Now, how would you utilise Dombele in your system?
That's a good question. Maybe if I have... that players, maybe I can put them play side by side, you know?
Okay.
Maybe. But of course, he can play. In the midfield, he can play in any position, I believe. But maybe I would do that. I don't know Mourinho. He has his opinion, of course. He make his choices, but maybe I do that, you know.
So you wouldn't use him as a number six to be that holding midfielder. You'd use him more creatively in the middle.
Yes, yes.
Right, let's talk a little bit about a certain Bruno Fernandes, who has really taken the Premier League by storm. He came to Manchester United in January, and I don't think anyone can doubt that had he not joined United, they wouldn't be third. He has been absolutely fantastic, and he's worked really well with Paul Pogba. And I think we're seeing the best of Paul Pogba thanks to Bruno Fernandes. Now, in England, there are a lot of people that like to be very critical of footballers, and they say, well, all he does is contribute penalties because that's where most of his goals have come from. But you know the game far more than any 5-year-old or 10-year-old that's on social media. What do you think Bruno Fernandes brings to Manchester United?
He brings irreverence. Irreverence.
Mm-hmm.
Creativity and leadership. Of course, he's a very skillful player, everybody. You know, it's not only penalties. He kicks the corners and the free kicks, and he's always, how can I say, he's a player that he can bring the team up, you know?
Yeah.
And,
got a lot of charisma.
He plays with joy. He likes to play football, and he wants to show that he likes to play football. And he's very... intelligent player, and the dynamics that he input in the team is very important. So it's different. It's how I said before, he brings creativity, leadership, and then dynamics, you know. It's very, very dynamic.
Mm.
And it's important. The sometimes football is very... how can I say, it's very predictable. So you need to have different players with different approaches of the game. And Bruno Fernandes, I believe, is one of that players. Because in Sporting, he was the same. And some of Portuguese journalists, they doubt about Bruno, we're going to be a great player in Manchester United because it's a different football, it's a different, it's a very, very hard team, it's difficult to get there and play, but Bruno is what we talk. He's one of the best players at the moment in England, I believe.
Yeah, he's doing remarkably well. And, you know, we've seen the likes of Jean Moutinho come to the Premier League. I know he's 33 years old, but he's another fantastic player. Ruben Neves, another brilliant player at
Ruben
Wolves.
Ruben Neves. He is one of the top players from Porto. Because that's another example. Ruben Neves, since he was very young, he was focused on his goal, you know?
Mm.
He wants to be one of the best. So he's very, very good. He scored many goals from long distance. Amazing goals, you know.
Mm. Right this moment in time, Manchester United are looking for another central defender. Lindelof hasn't worked really well with Maguire. I know it's their first season together, but Lindelof has got a lot of mistakes in him. And as we've seen the past couple of weeks, there's a central defender at Benfica. He's 23 years old, Ruben Dias, who I've been watching for about a year and a half. He looks very, very good. Can you see him coming to the Premier League?
Yes. Why not? He has the quality to play in any team in the world, I believe. He's very good central defender. He's not, how can you say, he's not very, very technician, but technicist, but he's a very, very good player because he knows where he can play and where he needs to be to play. And he's very strong, mentality is very strong, and I believe he's a very good central defender. Would be
the next Fernando Couto.
it's different player. Fernando Couto was a very strong central defender, you know. Mm. Very, very strong mentality and physically, and the balls with the head, it was very, very, very strong. Different players, I believe. Ruben is more cerebral, you can say, cerebral, I believe, yes. But he's equally high-level player. No?
Mm. Well, I'm glad we're talking about central defenders because for the past maybe year and a half, 2 years, I've been saying that there aren't that many world-class central defenders about at the moment. In the 90s, we had a plethora of them. They were everywhere. Laurent Blanc, Lilian Thuram could play at centre-back, Desailly, Couto, as we mentioned, and the list goes on, Jaap Stam. But these days, you can think of maybe five central defenders or six that you'd say are really, really good. You like your Van Dijks, Ramos. Why do you think the standard of defending isn't as great as what it was maybe 10, 15 years ago?
The game changed, right? Mm. So you need central defenders that, of course, they need to be strong defending because it's the first mission to central defenders. But you need also players that they can't be afraid to have the ball. They can't be afraid to play and to make the other players playing also. And of course, the game demands that the central defenders nowadays, they need to think more the game. And I believe with the time that the central defenders naturally gonna appear more and more because, of course, the clubs in the youth teams, they are aware and they are trying to see more in front, and they are preparing the players. So it's a natural difference between central defenders now and before, I believe.
Before we talk about your stint in China, we briefly touched on Portuguese coaches abroad. You know, we saw Paulo Fonseca at Shakhtar, and now you've got my friend Vitor Severino is the assistant coach at Shakhtar at the moment. Obviously, we mentioned the other coaches like Mourinho that's been coaching in various countries, etc., etc. Portuguese coaches are not afraid to ply their trade in different countries. And I've seen that more and more frequently these days. We've seen so many successful Portuguese coaches in the past, be it at youth level, be it at senior level. There is very high stock in Portuguese coaches. And I think that goes back to the tactical awareness. It goes back to the physical part of the game. It seems that the Portuguese coaches are heads and shoulders above pretty much most other nationalities at the moment.
Maybe. I saw the other day article that the article says that Portuguese coaches of Portugal are the sixth country that export more coaches.
Okay.
It's like that, but like I said before, the of course everybody is different, and I'm not saying the Portuguese coaches, they are all equal, of course not, because every people thinks in own way, but I think the tactical issue is very important, because the Portuguese coaches, they like to study the game. They like to study the tactical situations, systems, and so on. But besides that, the capacity to adapt to other cultures and to other countries, normally, that make your life easier when you go abroad. Like I said, I was in Saudi Arabia, I was in China. Of course, at the beginning, you have to adapt. Some things it's different, and if you go with that mentality, and you study the country and the football, of course, after you, in the beginning, you have to adapt. But after that, you can improve your ideas. You can improve your game model, and it's true. We have many examples from Portuguese coaches, they achieved success in China. Vitor Pereira was champion 2 years ago. Right now, Pedro Martins in Greece, and Luis Castro in Ukraine. And I don't know, but the key, I believe the key is the preparation, studying the game, and after, of course, each person and everybody has his own personality, but after that, the capacity to adapt to different environments.
That's right. So you were the under-16 coach of the Chinese national team.
Yes.
Now, again, you went from one culture, being the Portuguese, to the Saudi Arabian culture, and then you went all the way to China, which I guess you can say there might be a few similarities between the Saudi and the Chinese way of life, being the hierarchy or the way the country is run. But am I right to assume that the youngsters in Saudi Arabia have more flexibility than the children in China? Would that be fair to say?
Yes. But we have to, like I said, we have to accept and to try. We have to try to do our best in certain conditions. But it's true in China. That's their culture. Since the low ages, the children, they are used. They have very, very big discipline. And sometimes you can see when they play, when they practice, that influence. Because football, you need to be more flexible, like you said, more. You have to explore different situations. And sometimes when you have a person that they are since low ages, a lower age to be rigid, it's not easy to go to the next level, you know. I believe it's that kind of situation that you are asking, right?
Well, the reason why I asked is because you know, China makes up, China's got 1.4 billion people. It's a huge, huge country. I think it makes up 20% of the world's population. Yet the most popular, the most successful footballer they've produced is probably Sun Jihai, who was at Manchester City back in 2002. So it makes me wonder why they haven't been able to produce at least one world-class footballer. I mean, look at Africa. It's a massive continent, but yet they still produce the likes of Yaya Toure. But then you look at China and you're thinking, wow, what has happened here? Why do you think they haven't produced a world-class talent? My guess is, you know, maybe because they don't take football serious, maybe because it's a cultural thing. I don't know. But then when you look at the amount of money they've thrown into the Chinese Super League, it makes you wonder why they haven't been able to produce a star.
Yes, I agree. But they are investing, and not only on the China Super League. They are investing in the youth also. And it's a demand from government. They want to be a football country. And they are investing a lot. But, like I said, it takes time. Because the question is the culture, and the question is sometimes the mentality also. But, for example, under 14 team, I was in the under 16, but under 14 team, they were all season, all year in Spain. And the kids, sometimes they go to China to play some tournaments. And you can understand the difference between the Chinese kids. They were abroad and then returned, and the kids, they are always in China. So I believe with time, they're going to produce players. Like you said, they are the biggest population in the world. So maybe if they have many, many players playing in the learning through the years, they're going to produce players. I don't know if the football policy are the right one, because I felt they change a lot. They change a lot. I can share with you. I was in the Chinese Football Association, and I'm Portuguese, we have Spanish coaches, English coaches, Dutch coaches, Croatian coaches, French coaches, Belgium. It's a very miscellany, you know? So, I don't know, but it's possible to work with many nationalities, but you have to... You need to have a way. You need to have a project well defined, and you need to follow that project. You can't change if your team under 14 team, for example, lose a match with Cambodia, and it was a match that is doesn't have many importance, but it's you lose against Cambodia. So who is the coach? Is that guy? Go away. Came another one. That's an example, okay? But what I'm saying is they are trying to find their way. They have a technical director from Belgium. I believe he's doing a good job, but it takes time. It takes time. Of course, many players, many people playing at the schools, the kids, they have 1 hour per day from football, 1 hour per day. It's an obligation. Sometimes I think some kids, they don't like to play, but they have to. That's another problem. I don't know. We have China has Wulei in Spain, right? Wulei is a good player, but it's not like the the other star. But it's going to take time, but I believe they're going to reach the top, I believe, because they are investing seriously.
You use the words time, structure, money. Unfortunately, a lot of nations don't have the luxury of all three.
Like Mozambique.
There you go. But then when you look at your experiences throughout the game, and you mentioning, you know, certain players behaving certain ways, etc., have you ever had issues with parents or perhaps agents getting involved? And the reason why I ask is because in the UK, I mean, I don't know if you know this, but we've got a lot of very promising youngsters. Some of them have gone to Germany to develop. Others have stayed within the UK and signed big wages, i.e. Callum Hudson-Odoi, who at 18 years old, signed a new contract at Chelsea worth £120,000 a week. He barely played 15, 20 games. And the reason why he signed it, or the reason why Chelsea offered him that money, is because they were scared he was going to end up at Bayern Munich and they would lose out on a big payout like perhaps Manchester City did with Jadon Sancho, and who has obviously come on leaps and bounds. Now, we've mentioned so many fantastic footballers that came through Sporting's academy and have been sold on for big money or relatively big fees. But when you look at the infancy of their careers, when they were teenagers or when they signed their first pro contracts, did you ever encounter any issues with agents or people trying to move them onto different clubs, which obviously hindered your tactics or the way that you tried to get them to progress?
Not like other colleagues, because in other teams, because in youth, I was in, when I was in Estoril, it was a long time ago, it wasn't like that. But when I was in Sporting and after in Porto, normally I didn't talk with the parents. We have a structure, we have a technical coordinator, and the team managers, they do that job, you know. But sometimes we talk with the parents when we decide. It's our decision. But that's a very big problem. In Portugal, right now, I'm away from that a few years ago, but when I talk with some friends that they have sons playing right now, and it's a big problem. The parents always... They try to interfere in the work, because you can forget that it's a work. It's like a teacher at the school. At the school, I believe the parents don't go to the school to watch the classes and say to the teacher how to teach. I believe that. And in the football, the coaches from youth, they need to do their job without pressure from the parents, because the pressure normally is about the players, is on the kids, you know. And sometimes some friends tell me they watch matches between kids with 10 years old, and it's amazing, the parents always screaming and saying things. That's the big pressure to the kids, and I think it's not good for them, their development. The agents is another question. The agents, nowadays, it's the big clubs, they always looking the best players. And of course, if they find a kid with 6 years old, they want the kid. They want 6 years old, the kid needs to play. Of course, play football and play another things. But normally, they don't have agents officially, but since lower ages, the agents are present. I think the agents in football, they are important. They have their role. And perhaps a good agent could be a good influence to the kid, to the family. But we know they aren't all like that, you know. Sometimes agents, they are around and they want to represent the player with 12, 14, 16, it's different. they want to represent the player and the, only with the target of the money. But yes, it's a problem, I think. And for me, the best way to deal with that is the clubs and the structures from the clubs. They need to talk in the first place with the parents. Normally not the coach, but the technical coordinator, sometimes with the presence of the coach, sometimes the, no. And if the people think like that, why not talk with the agent? If the, for example, a player with 15, 16 years old, if he has an agent, call the agent, talk with him and explain what is the project for that player and what the club wants from the player and what is happening well and what is failing, and let's work together to getting better. But yes, it's a problem. It's a problem, but it's a reality. We have to know to live with that.
But this is a problem that occurs with every club, isn't it? It isn't just the lower league clubs. It happens at Sporting, at Porto, at Benfica.
No, no. Yes, yes, yes. It happens everywhere, in every club. And what I said before, me as a coach, I didn't have any problem because we have a structure that make like a filter, you know. Mm. But yes, it's a problem, of course. But that's the football nowadays is like that. And if you go to watch a match from under 19, for example, or under 17, from Sporting, Porto, Benfica, and other clubs in Portugal, you know, always you find scouts from many clubs in Europe, from Europe, many clubs from Europe, not only in Portugal. So, of course, the rules are like that. So, the clubs, they have to adapt also to that reality. And they need to learn to deal with that situation. For me, the most important thing is to educate the player. And if you can educate the player, not only about football, not only about knowing to play, not only about knowing the game, tactic, technique, physical, etc. To educate the player to that other question, other issues. For example, how to communicate with the camera when he's in a flash interview, for example.
Mm.
In Sporting, we did that. We did that. I was not only a coach. I was also. I can say an educator.
Right.
I had been part of the project that we tried to prepare the players for the future, not only on the field, not only on the match, not only on the game, but the things around the football inside the four lines, you know.
Yeah.
How he can communicate with the press, with the journalists, with the camera, how he can deal with the, for example, the teach about having the first bank account.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? And other things like healthy issue, healthy things, nutrition, about doping, what is doping, everything. It's very important. When you are planning to develop a player, you can't only think about what happens in the pitch, you know.
If you were to go to Sporting right now, let's say, for example, you got the job as head of the academy, would you feel under more pressure to deliver now than perhaps back when you were there originally? Because the way I see it, as you mentioned at the top of the show, football has evolved a lot. We're seeing youngsters on big wages. We're seeing more sponsors. We're seeing more and more money involved in the game, especially when it comes to younger players. So do you think you'd be under more pressure to deliver now than, say, you were 10, 15 years ago?
I don't think so.
No?
No, because as a coach, I always try to be actualized, you know.
Yep.
Try to be in this time. Mm-hmm. So, and if you do your work with integrity, if you are, if what you say is what you do, if you try to do our best with your knowledge, with your experience, and your with your resources that you have, you don't have problems. So you are how can I say, we are tranquilized, you know.
Yep.
So of course I know what I understood what you're saying, but we are in this time, so we have to do our in this time, and I believe I'm ready for all jobs, you know, because I am 48 years old right now.
You're still young. You're still young.
Yes, but my career, as you know, I had been in the youth with youth teams, in professional teams, like assistant coach, head coach. So I have different in Portugal, abroad. I have different experiences and in different levels. And of course, we have to be available to learn always. And but of course, I'm always trying to innovate and prepare myself. So I don't think that pressure would be a problem. Of course, sometimes in some situations you need to deal with the pressure. I don't know. Only if I'm in the situation, that situation, I can evaluate well.
Absolutely.
But in Mozambique, we have our pressure also, and the national team we have to win. So. And sometimes without many resources, it's more difficult. But we have young players, talented players, and I want to tell you it's important that the big clubs in Europe, they need to watch Mozambique. They need to look players from Mozambique. They have quality. Of course, it depends. It depends. The club, the project, the environment, everything. But I invite everybody to look better, look with open eyes. The players from Mozambique.
Who would you say is the standout player at the moment for the national team?
don't make me. they're gonna hurt them. Yeah. We have. Players, you know, Mexer is the central defender from Bordeaux.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, 31 right now. Like Zainadine Jr. is the central defender from Maritimo,
yep.
Madeira. Is the captain, and we have a very talented player that never played in Europe. He made his career in Mozambique and South Africa. Is Dominguez. His name, his real name is Elias Pelembe. But
he's Dominguez. Playing in South Africa now, isn't he?
Bidvest, yes. So that, yes, he's the captain, like Mixer and Zainadine. They are the three captains. So I'm talking about the more experienced players. They are very good players, but we have other players. And right now we have the player with 19 years old that I put playing in the September, the first match in the first team, Jenny Katam. He's in the under 23 team from Sporting. Mm-hmm. He's a midfielder, left foot, and he's a very good player. But of course, he needs to learn more, like everybody. But we have other players. We have Witty. Witty is a winger, a left winger. He plays in the Nacional da Madeira in Portuguese, second league, but next season in the first league. And we have Raniel, who is left back from Lille, France. So we have a few players, but I believe they're gonna improve. We have a player that plays in Songo, Mozambique. For me, he's a very, very good professional and very good player also. He's Telinho. He played before in Ajax Cape Town in South Africa. But we have many players, many. Of course, I'm suspicious to say that because I'm the national coach. But we aren't like other African teams. They are like Cameroon, like Cote d'Ivoire, like Nigeria, Senegal, Algeria. They have strong teams. But Mozambique is on the way. Mozambique is on the way. The government, they are interested to support the federation, and I believe if some conditions are accomplished, we're gonna do something. Of course, right now with COVID, it's I don't know. I have to wait to see when I return to Mozambique to restart working on the field with the players and prepare the players. But that's it. That's a big challenge.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's a very, very difficult region to really break into. I mean, even, you know, Nigeria have struggled over the past few years. Cote d'Ivoire are struggling at the moment. Ghana, yeah. It's a very competitive region. People don't realise, you know, Algeria came on the rise. Egypt have done remarkably well over the past few years.
Egypt.
You know, it's never easy, AFCON. Never, never easy. So, you know, we really need to pay attention to that region because there are so many talented players, so many talented players there. But, Luis, one more thing before I let you go, my friend. Thank you for joining me. Really appreciate it. I'm going to ask you a very difficult question right now. You're probably going to laugh, right? If you can think of the 11, maybe best players you've coached over the years, if you made a team of 11 players, you could play 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3. Again, I'm putting you on the spot here. Can you think of 11 players in a team that you've coached?
It's a very difficult question. But the goalkeeper, Rui Patricio.
Okay.
Rui Patricio. The right back, Cedric.
Who's at Arsenal, Cedric, yeah?
Arsenal, yeah. Central defenders, it's very difficult, but Eric Dier.
Oh.
He was my player also in Sporting. Eric Dier. I know sometimes he plays like midfielder, but for me, he's...
Why do you think many Tottenham fans don't like him at the moment? I know he hasn't had a great season, but he's come under a lot of criticism by Spurs fans this season.
I know Eric Dier, and I know he has quality, and he's a winner. Is a winner. Maybe sometimes things don't go very well, but he had been injured, right?
Mm-hmm.
I believe he's gonna return to high level, you know, because he's a winner and he has quality. Of course, you can say, but there are many other players, maybe better. Okay, but I coach him, and of course you can say also when I coach him, he was 15. It's different, you know. But the player, he has for me, he has many qualities, and he's a winner.
Brilliant.
And the other central defender, I put Zainadine. He's okay. Mozambique. He's a very good player. Left back, let me see. Left back. Maybe Mario Rui. You know Mario Rui?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Plays in Italy.
Yep.
He's, for me, he was one of the best that I coached. In the midfield, it's very difficult to say because I coach João Mário.
Mm-hmm.
João Mário, Adrián Silva. Adrián.
Yeah.
I know he was in, in England, but not very well. But he went to England to be watching the other players playing.
Yeah, he didn't have a great time at Leicester, but, to be fair. But
he was one of my best players because when he had 15, for me, he understands the game like no one. And but I like him a lot, like a player. But I know he's not.
Well, he wasn't he in France at an early age? Was he in France?
No, England. He went to Chelsea.
No, but when he was young. Oh.
I know. Yes. No, sorry. He didn't went. Because that's an issue also in his career. Because
right.
when he had 16, he was invited to go, but he didn't went. You know? In France, in Monaco, he was in Monaco.
Right.
But not before Leicester, and after. Yes. Okay, but I like him. He's a very, very good player. Mm-hmm. But in the middle, I was saying João Mário, Adrián Silva. It's very difficult. But you have a new player that is emerging right now. Is Fábio Vieira in Porto.
Yep.
Fábio Vieira.
Yep.
Fábio Vieira. Of course, Cristiano Ronaldo, Ricardo Quaresma, and like wingers, but Ronaldo can be a striker also.
He'll get you 50 goals from wide left, won't he?
Yes. He's a scorer. What can we do? But I don't know. Maybe Domínguez from Mozambique.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay.
That's a good team.
But that's a very difficult question, I can say.
Okay, here's an easier question. Why do you think Rui Patricio wears number 11?
Very good question. I don't know, but I can imagine maybe when he arrived...
Someone else had the number one, so he thought put another
yes,
one.
Yes, but he could say I'm the European champion. So it's not like that. It's not like that. He's a very quiet person, and I think he don't like conflicts and problems. So for him, I believe. I don't know. I'm just supposing. Okay, I believe maybe he said, okay, 11 for me is okay. It's 1-1. It's okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's strange.
It was a bit of an unceremonious exit from Sporting, wasn't it? With the whole contract situation, and there's the issue with the fans breaking into the dressing.
Very bad. Very bad.
Crazy.
Very ugly situation in Sporting. The worst day in the history.
It was shocking. I mean, we heard it out here. We've heard about stories happening in Europe because, you know, happened in Turkey, in Greece, but
yes.
For it to happen in Portugal for such a big club as well, it was an absolute shock. I remember seeing Baz Doss. Yes. Was it Baz Doss with the head injury?
Yes, yes.
Shocking, absolutely yes. Shocking.
Yes, yes. It was the worst day in history. And Rui, he's strong. He's a strong man. But I remember the Portuguese final cup, Portuguese Cup final, the last match from that season. It was they went to they played, but they aren't well. And in the end, Rui Patricio was crying like a baby. That's a very very. I can't imagine only the players and the persons that. Experience that situation can say. But they have to play, so they are professionals. They have to move on. And Rui is very well in England. It's, for me, he's top goalkeeper in Europe. He's one of the best. I don't know your opinion, but for me, he's one of the best.
Yeah, I think he's up there. I think Oblak, for me, Oblak and Ter Stegen.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. Oblak is very, 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 very. No doubt. Yeah. I agree with you.
Wonderful.
But I didn't coach Oblak.
Hey, you get the credit for Rui Patricio.
No, it's different. When you coach, because it's different. You coach kid with 15 years old, with 16, 14, you know?
Mm.
And you saw he's growing.
Yeah.
And then, of course, if he's good, he's good. If he's not good, he's not good. But I think it's not not a favor, but it's one of the best.
Mm.
Oblak is very, very good, without doubt.
Fantastic. Well, Luis, thank you ever so much for your time. Really, really appreciate it. I've really enjoyed this episode. It's been fantastic. And I wish you all the success for the national team.
Thank you.
And hopefully we can talk again on the podcast. We can talk tactics. We can talk about coaching. Anything you want.
Okay.
Fantastic.
I'm available when you want. I wish you luck for your podcast and your work, and we keep talking.
Fantastic, appreciate it. Thank you very much for your time. You have a wonderful week.
Okay, thank you.
Obrigado.
Thank you. Obrigado.
Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.